Hey leaders, welcome back to Game Time. I'm your coaching teammate, Shauna Griffiths, and as always, you're in for a conversation with an impactful leader who is my friend. He is a testament to my theory that leadership is a sport, and he is most definitely a leadership athlete. So with that, I am welcoming Charlie Ruiz. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here. I'm excited for the conversation.
So, folks, I always tell you how I know my guests. So, Charlie and I are both members of The Post, which is a membership of former athletes. He is a far more accomplished former athlete than I am as a former baseball player. He's a professional baseball player. And so, we were at this conference, and Charlie, I never actually told you this, but I saw you standing in the group of people. Caroline was standing there. You were with another woman. I'm not exactly sure who else was there. And you just had such great energy about you. And I was standing there like, I want to know him. I want to hang with him. So you are hanging with me today, folks. This is going to be just the coaches catching
Thank
up,
you.
coaches corner. A big part of what Charlie does is in the coaching space. So we're going to get to all of that. Your company that you have founded, CLR Connection. We're going to get into all of that. He is part of the 2025 Leadership Athlete Draft Class. So thank you for letting me draft you. So give us the take on you, what you're up to, and allow the audience to get to know you.
So currently, I'm from the San Francisco Bay Area, and I am fortunate to be here raising a family with three beautiful little girls. I have my wife and my dog Penny, but being home here is kind of the start of everything for me, and it's also the reason why I'm still here. My background before this, right, getting into professional speaking and coaching and training really started here in San Leandro, California, which is right outside of Oakland. Not too many people know where it's at, but when I think about my work now as a leadership facilitator, a coach, a trainer, and a speaker, everything rooted is in connection and presence. And a lot of that stems from the community. And I don't know if you know this, but last year, just about this time, I ran what I'm calling an identity marathon, where I had never ran a marathon before. And I thought to myself, like, let me just go ahead and get lost and go for a run one day. And I found myself like 10 miles in, like emotional, going to my old Parkside Commons apartments that I grew up in. And like I was flooded with emotions of like my past and my history. And then that turned into probably one of the most transformative events that I've ever done when it comes to pushing myself physically. So kind of an odd way to start, but it is a lot of what I do, helping leaders with their mindset, their communication, and their identity now.
Yeah, no, it's actually so perfect because I mean, you know me enough by now to know I'm all about how can we show up every day truly authentically? Because that's when we can make that connection in a meaningful way. Otherwise, to a large degree, you're just a mouthpiece, whether you're in a leadership seat within an organization or doing work similar to what you and I do, speaking, leading people, coaching. Identity has so much to do with that. To that end, there's, and I know this is something that you work with people a lot on, is storytelling. And here's the thing. I think that knowing yourself is one thing, being able to talk about who you are is another thing, and I think it all takes self-awareness. And I would just love your take on that and what you're doing with people in the storytelling space.
Yes. So, like, what am I doing on the storytelling lens? I think you said the start of where I work with just teams and individuals in itself, and storytelling is a big part of it. The business for me right now is structured around three things. I help you know yourself. That's the identity, right? That's your story. That's your unique background, the values, the core. I help you know your players. And I got that from my mom because she would say, know your players. In this case, in a corporate or a team lens, it's like, know your employees, your colleagues, right? So, working with teams and organizations, whether it's high performing teams, workshops, or effective communication strategies within the leadership. Or the third, and it's what you shared, is if I know myself and I know my players, I got to be able to tell that story with conviction, with confidence, with competence. And sometimes that's actual like verbal, and it's also within our actions. So those are the three lenses in which I usually help people with. But the storytelling space is something that I think has stemmed even more from my backgrounds at the communications firm that I worked at previously.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. You know, I do think that sometimes people really struggle with who am I? What is that element of my authentic self? Usually, when I hear people say that, I kind of stumble with it because for me, it came really naturally. I was just who I was. You referenced your mom, and my mom always just accepted me for who I was. I played basketball in college. I was, I guess, air quotes, a tomboy, but there was no judgment around it. And I never thought of what anybody thought of me. And so I just really embraced this is who I am authentically and have been, I think, kind of lucky to be able to carry that through as I've continued my journey.
And I love that you've been able to identify that, again, going back to the awareness of understanding that. And I think for me, I don't know when that kind of came to a head to say, hey, wait a second, or that came to the most important thing where I was like, I need to lean into this even more. And I'm happy to go there as we continue the conversation. But I know I was not. I know I was not being myself. I know that once I finished my playing days and I had kind of completely removed my identity of being a baseball player, it was because I had always been introduced as the baseball player. So if I were to take you back 8 years or twelve years to when I finished playing, it was a forced surgery. So it was not planned. And then you find yourself in a state where I still had a year to finish school. I was still rehabbing my shoulder in hopes of playing. So I didn't really know where I wanted to go. And I was the first person in my family to go to college. So for me, I didn't know what to do after that other than what everyone had told me to do. But then when you look at it and go, as an athlete, we have been raised essentially in a way, listening to coaches of people telling you exactly what to go do. So now all of a sudden that's gone. And I have my parents who are my heroes that are saying, you can do whatever you want. They'd be like, we got you, but we don't know what to tell you. Right? Like, we don't know what to tell you. Now here I am. I have maybe one or two friends who have gone into the corporate space, and a lot of other people have kind of done the blue collar thing locally. And I'm like, I don't know what to do and I don't know what I want. So fast forward 6 months of not getting a job and bombing interviews because I have no experience. It ended up coming back to say, wait a second, there's this thing that I have where I was an athlete, that the first job I had, and funny enough, what I was in Tampa for, which we can get to, is I walked into an interview right there in Palo Alto, and software, startup, like all the bells and whistles, all the things. And I go for the interview and I bombed it again. But then all of a sudden, the guy who was a hiring manager, one played lacrosse and one played, I think, football. And they were like, hey, this says volunteer experience and it says professional baseball. And he was like, did you play professional baseball with the Colorado Rockies? I'm like, not the major leagues, just the minor leagues. And then he was like, first of all, it's irrelevant whether you made it to the major leagues or the minor, like you still got to do something that is such a small percentage. And yet you didn't really talk about that at all. And here you are 27 years old interviewing. That is a job. And it's one that is unique. And then he was like, we'll hire you for the first 3 months, do it like a test. And as long as you're not like a crazy person, like we'll give you a normal salary and you'll be one of our sales reps. And I was like, oh, okay. So even to this day,
yeah,
that identity was something I was fighting and trying to get rid of. But yeah, here it is. It was actually the first thing that got me my job. And again, I didn't learn my lesson, but we can talk about that later.
No, but it's such a great point. Bear Butler, who you're friends with, the CEO and founder of Shift Group, I've had on the show recently, was talking about, as an athlete, knowing your purpose and being able to align your purpose and your priorities. And that's a foundation. So I say these things because we talk about it as former athletes, that we knew those things. As we went through various transitions and reinventing ourselves, we didn't necessarily know how to talk about it, but we knew these core elements. So for people listening, if you've been in sports, great. If you know this or you're a fan or something, but you know, as you say in your work, people can understand if they haven't been in directly athletes or directly in that space, but we're sharing these things because people who are listening, you too can identify your purpose, your priority, and then start to weave that into your storytelling of who you authentically are. I just think it's such a great way that you describe that.
Couldn't agree more. And I think that's where you said weaving the story into it, which goes back to answering some of your question around story. Fortunately, a couple of days ago, I was able to do a webinar for the Major League Baseball Players Association. They gave me a platform, and funny enough, it was after I just led an offsite with that original boss who hired me nearly 12 years ago. So it was a very full circle moment for me. It's like, wow, right? To be able to go up there, the guy who hired me because I actually told a story about being an athlete and then not talking about it again for 8 years until I started my own business. what I shared with the gentleman from the Major League Baseball Players Association alumni was that you all have a unique story. You all have one. And yet we don't know how to talk about it because we've never been trained to. So when it comes to like getting a communication coach or someone to work with you on your story, the other part of the being an athlete is we have egos. Like, I don't need help. I don't need to do this. Yet at the same time, all of a sudden, when I say, what is one of your most transferable skills for you to tell somebody, whether you're on stage or you're trying to get a job, and then you say something like, I'm coachable, or I'm an effective communicator, and I say, what does that mean? And they're like, oh, I pause, stutter, pause. So then I have to introduce this notion of something that we know, right? Three-act structure of beginning, middle, and end, however you want to position it. Like, give us the context, make it unique, make it something that's specific enough to set up the stage. And then from there, right, give us some actual conflict. What are you fighting through? What are some of those trials and tribulations that you had within the story that's unique to you? And then what was that lesson? And then the lesson that you learned that you can then apply and bring back home for us to say, this is why this matters. This is why effective communication matters. And we all have it, but most of the time, even out there in the entrepreneur space, you'll see it. It's rinse and repeated messages without any flavor or anything that's unique about that individual. And story is emotion. It's connection. And when you just take a quote from Atomic Habits and put it on the internet, right, that's not you. So going back to authenticity and storytelling, to me, it's hand in hand.
Yeah, it really is. And there's an element in what you're saying is about making yourself memorable. There's a lot of times when I'm working with leaders, whether it's in a coaching or consulting capacity, they're talking about, but they're going in to pitch a new idea, or if it's an agency and they're pitching. When you go in and you're just a robot, or you're treating it like it is an interview, it is a pitch, and that robotic sense, it is completely different than thinking about, we're just having a conversation. I'm getting to know them. I'm solving their problem. So I think that when we are, and people in the audience who are listening, when you're talking to someone, when I'm sitting down today with you, Charlie, we're just having a conversation and sharing your story. And I think it's, again, it's about being memorable. And that's what changes the dynamic, especially when, to your point, you're authentic in the way you do it.
And that's where authenticity too, I think, plays a role too in being memorable. Like, how can you be memorable if you are trying to be somebody you're not? And if I'm trying to build a relationship and connect with somebody, this is where, again, I think one of the key fundamental things as not just a leader, right, is as a human, is are you actually giving yourself time to listen to the other person and understand them, their words, their tone, and how they're showing up? Because then I also can then lean into a side of maybe me or create some more space for them by just listening and letting them talk a little bit more. But again, that comes back into what is the purpose and intention of me showing up as a leader? And again, when I think of being a leadership athlete, or I think of the best coaches that I know and players, player coaches, right? They have the ability to be able to show up and be present and execute. But I also know that they have my back because they've listened and they know who I am.
Yeah. And that starts to go to something that I've read you posting about, and I've seen it on your site, is the element of the leadership presence. And the reason why I thought of it right then is because I remember from the first time I spoke to you in person there at the post event, and then anytime we have talked since then, you are so present. You are dialed in. You are a really great, active listener. And it makes a very special experience of communicating with you. And so is that part of what you are teach others as far as leadership presence? Or can you talk to us a bit about that?
Yes. Yeah. So what exactly is, like, how do I define kind of leadership presence? And do I work with people on how to be present? There's layers, as with anything, but I think presence does get bubbled up into this, I need to sit and meditate and not say anything, and have it be kind of like a more sedentary thing. When I think of making presence actionable, I think one, when you say it just verbally, oh, they've got a great presence about them. If you were to ask somebody that, like, what does that mean? And I think of it as like, it's the energy that you bring, right? And then they come in and they know who they are. They know themselves. Like, they know how they want to bring, how they want to create space. So like, they have this presence about them. So absolutely, is there something that you can do with that? Is it a learned skill? It takes time, but it also takes time with understanding, who am I and how do I want to show up? What are my core values? What am I aspiring to do and show up in a room full of 50 people? I want to be the connector. I want to be the someone who's going to give energy. I don't want to be the person who's constantly pitching something, right? They have a presence about them. And then the other thing is, again, I think this is one of the biggest gifts that you can give, right? It's the ability to choose your presence over preference. And funny enough, when I had joined the Post nearly 2 years ago, I'd gone through a brand kind of exercise, a storytelling brand exercise with a dear friend of mine. So I had like a 2-sentence statement. And I remember I didn't really know anybody at the initial founding members kickoff in New York. And I remember the woman who was leading it, Krista, had reached kind of the audience and said, hey, can you take your sentence or take whatever we did, and I'd already had one, and bubble it down into 5 words. And I stood up and I shared, I choose presence over preference. And that just came to me. Which then comes into like, what does that mean? Am I focused on the person and the words they're saying? Am I actually listening to the tone in which they're bringing? And am I able to connect the dots or connect them to serving and helping them in the future? So yes, it's something that I work on with people, whether it's individually or within a team. And then the third one is, of course, when I think of presence, it's your actual delivery of your presentation, of your message, of your keynote. Your head, heart, body. How are you delivering? What is your presence between those three variables? It's one of my favorite things that I do with organizations and people. It's now a course that I'm doing at offsites, and I call it the sport of speaking, which we can talk about later.
Well, I love that, the sport of speaking. No, it's so great. And when you were talking about it, the thing that hit me is you're describing it as something that you learned first yourself, and it's something that you went through. I kind of preempted this conversation by saying that I think that a lot of things are underestimated in the journey of life and in leadership and in business. And I really think that self-awareness is one of those things, is one of those things that tends to be underestimated. And a lot of people think, I want to be a leader, I am leading, and it's all about other people. I often refer to this, my first coach at the University of Michigan, she used to say that when you point the finger at other people, you have fingers pointing back at you. And I remember that consistently, but that's the thing. A lot of times people think, I'm going to take this air quote seat of leadership, or all these people are going to be under my leadership, and it's all pointing out at them. And what you just described, and what I think tends to be underestimated by a lot of people, is that there's 3 fingers pointing back at you. So start it within you, you know? So I really love the way you describe that.
Shauna, that's the root of the keynote that I have when it comes to like, how can I define presence in these ways for myself, for my community, for my craft, my profession, and then for my creativity? Like if those are the 4 variables, I call them the 4 C's, and I can create specific behaviors, systems, and actions around those 4 based on the season that I'm in, all around being present there, that's going to require me to be extra intentional. But it all starts with me. So my favorite question, anyone who's done the 4 C's exercise, they know at the very end of it, we'll go through it. And I'll be like, great, who did this? Like, whose plan is this? Who created this? And they'll pause. They'll be like, well, we did. And I'm like, no, you did. Because everything starts inward before outward. At least it should. And I'm not a shoulder, but in this case, it should. And that came to me, not just in sport, when I sat in the dugout with the godfather of sports psychology at Long Beach State, who was all around awareness, was all around be where your feet are. He was like the kingpin of everything. So as I sat there and realized, okay, I learned this in my junior college with my mentor, and I could say friend, right? But more so coach, Steve Friend, to then go to Long Beach State to hear the guy who's working with the Chicago Cubs and all these major league teams share the same thing, that everything starts when you can slow the game down and be aware of where your feet are. And now I just pick that up, and 12 years later, like, this is the core of what I do when it comes to for myself, but then also working with other people.
Yeah. And that allows you to articulate it in a way that I think that anybody truly, you don't have to be a former athlete to get that. You know, you can actually, oh, okay, that's the how of it. Because again, I think people will say, oh, be a leader or be self-aware. But well, how am I supposed to do that? And so I think some of these are, quite frankly, cheat codes that is helping people understand how do you actually get there. And it's not just things like centering yourself, meditating, things like that. A lot of things are either lived experience, learned by listening to others. So it's just really helpful the way you shared that.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. And something I want to dip back to is, because I think it's another thing that's really underestimated, is related to transitions and reinvention. I do not think, and this is again from my own experience and then my experience dealing with working with other leaders, is there isn't enough emphasis or understanding, I think, on learning curves in, call it life, in jobs. And I thought of this earlier when you talked about your own identity challenge when you went from playing to, well, what the hell am I supposed to do now? And I'll share a little bit of my own story with it, is that, as we said, I played in basketball in undergrad. Then I was like, oh, well, I'm just going to stay in sport. So then I ran cross country for my fifth year of eligibility. But then it was like, I cannot get away from the game. I'm going to work in the game.
Yeah.
So I worked in the NBA family for, oh my gosh, I don't know, 13 years, something like that. I didn't truly have the floor ripped underneath you until I decided, it was a conscious decision to change my career. I went to the agency side. But it was, I noticed it just as you said, I went to go introduce myself to someone and I could no longer say, I'm at the time, Shauna Sikorsky, and I work for the Nets, or I work in the NBA family. It was like the ball stopped bouncing. I had no shoes to put on. I had no belonging related to the game. And I had a full on identity crisis. So I get it. And I don't think there was, at the time, there was no preparation for me to know that I was going to have that experience. A lot of athletes talk about this. You know, and I think it's really relevant for people in business. They have these careers, they have these big titles, and then something happens and it changes, whether they decided to or it was decided for them. And there is this identity crisis that happens. I just think that there's so much more could be done to emphasize it and prepare people.
Yes. Short answer. Yes. There is an identity crisis. There is stuff that not just athletes, military, even people who are in education, they go through and they get a new career. They've given and poured their heart into something. Now they're like, well, now what? And this is where, when it comes to your identity, and again, this is where part of what I'm working on is developing a program and also a talk on my identity marathon that I did because of this. And as I was kind of contemplating having a conversation with a dear friend and another old manager of mine, a leader that I work with in my communications firm, we had talked about, and she had shared this passage that she wrote, and it hit me because I would always talk about this statement of what got you here won't get you there. And I skimmed, I kind of read parts of the book, and regardless though, it's just that quote never really sat right with me. Depending on who you are and how you're showing up, I think the reason why people say, oh, well, what got you here won't get you there, saying continue to look forward, to which I say, yes, and if they have not actually gone back and thought about what has shaped who they are as a leader, and to take back and going into the word that you said, reinvent, right? This is something that's been on my mind with my groups, with my post group, with people that I've been talking to, is that athletes, the great ones, not just athletes, but teams, they understand how to reinvent themselves. They have a skill set, but they take what they have that they want to then show up in a new space, which you'll appreciate because I actually leverage this with one of my younger people that I coach in product over at Google. I asked him a question first was, do you know who Vince Carter is? And he was like, yeah. And then I'm like, okay, what do you know of Vince Carter? To which he says, he's like the guy who shoots three-pointers, right? To where I'm like, yes, and yes, he's technically sixth all time. And he's also a guy who jumped over the guy in Olympics and also was known as one of the most prolific dunkers of all time. But because he was younger and didn't know the Vince Carter that I knew, that I grew up with as a favorite player during the 90s and 2000s, right, was that he was known as a dunker. But Vince Carter had to reinvent himself over and over again to then now he becomes a three-point shooter. The best athletes know how to do that. The best teams know how to reinvent themselves. But the thing is, they take what they learned and what they gathered from their past, and now they bring that to the current state. Athletes who don't know or spend that time because they've been told and given, like, you are everything. Here's your silver spoon. Here's your gold spoon. And all of a sudden, they have nothing. And they're knocking on doors, selling software in Silicon Valley, having no idea what the hell to do with their life, or feeling useless and helpless, and they don't have coaches that are helping them consistently. Talk about an identity crisis. You go from signing autographs to can't get a single person to pick up your phone, and you're making no money.
I couldn't agree with everything you're saying more. So many of those things. Obviously, I don't have the experience of, you know, playing professionally, but it really is true, because here's the thing. You have these transferable skills, and you're right. When you're talking about Vince, there was just a jersey.
Yes.
I think retiring ceremony. That was so awesome. A lot of my friends were at it, and people were posting on LinkedIn about referencing BC3. So to your point, he reinvented himself. He had those transferable skills. And I think, again, we're talking about it. It's so easy to see, actually, when you look at high-performing athletes. But again, for the business audience, people listening to this, like, you can do the same thing. Just because you said, oh, well, I was in this role, and again, either I decided or someone else decided that I'm not going to have that role anymore. It's not that you have to start over from scratch. To your point, what are the transferable skills that you can reinvent yourself? And then it's the story that you tell them. The coach that I work with, his amazing, Leslie Harris, has always said to me that if it's your story, then you control the narrative. And as long as it is rooted in truth, because I have an I don't lie policy in life, and it's intentional, to your point about your own story, you truthfully could say, I play professional baseball. And people are like, whoa, I want to hear more about it. But when you say, well, I didn't quite make it to the majors, I only played in the minor, it's like, wait, what? Why did you just do yourself a disservice? So I think, again, these are hows that I think we're sharing with people that become so critical in the reinventing process.
So work with me here, Sean. I know we said this was going to be a bit of a coach's corner. So if you'd be willing.
Okay.
We could even go through
Please.
The exercise that I did with some of the gentlemen from the Major League Baseball Players Association last week, where we identify one skill and we put this into a frame that you can then tell and then share. And this is something that you can then do for yourself. Again, that if you have athletes, executives, and this isn't just for athletes, right? These are for executives that are trying to figure out what is the skill, where they learn it, who they learn it from, why does it matter?
I love it. Let's go. Let's go.
If you want to do it live, we can play with it. And again, a bit of a test and tweak here live.
Yeah, let's do it. I love it.
So think of it as like a diamond, right? I like, of course, CLR connection. I like to speak in diamonds. This is how I operate now. At least how I'm telling myself. It starts at home. Go figure. Baseball diamond starts at home. First step is you identifying what skill. So if I were to ask you, like, what is a transferable skill that you think athletes have? That you have, that you specifically, like, if I were to tell you one skill, I think it's imperative that you tell a story about, what would that be for you?
Can I give two?
You maybe.
No.
Give me, oh, go ahead.
Well, can I say it's a characteristic or is it a skill? Sure. A characteristic is authenticity and coachability. Those are my two things.
All right. We're gonna use coachability.
Okay.
Coachability, right? To be coachable is one of the most important things that you need to be able to show up and do as a leader, as a former athlete. Is that fair?
Fair.
So that might be like the point of your story at the very bottom, right? Like in order to, like, coachability is number one, that's your lesson. So that'd be the thing at the bottom. Now, if we go to that first base, if you will, first step is setting us up, making it unique to Shauna. When you were to think of maybe a time that you felt you were most coachable, or that you learned a lesson around being coached and the benefit of it, like, where does that take you? Where does that take you in your career? And this is like the who, the what, the where, the when. Like, where does it take you? Where are you at?
So it actually takes me to learning the coachability around the shift to consulting and being a part of a management consulting firm. There's a gentleman, so if you want me to tell you the story about it, there's a gentleman named Bob Wiesner who I've been working with. And so I've been able to learn from him, both in literal instruction that he'll share at times, but then also by example. So there's so much that I'm a very visual and audible learner. So I can see somebody else doing that. I'm a mimicker. Okay. So those things have helped me in my journey.
Awesome. We'll get there. So,
okay.
Bob Wiesner. So these are players. This is the context.
Okay.
So you're following along, right? This is like, so where are you? How many years ago? Like, when is this 2000? When is this?
A few years ago.
Okay, so let's say 2021, right?
Yep.
I'm in, where are you at? Where are you living?
Colorado.
I'm in Colorado.
Yep.
And what are you doing at the time? You're like making a transition from coaching.
I had been working full time, and I was laid off when the tech downturn hit, and then I restarted SLG Impact.
Boom. So that is like set up context. Act okay. one. Act two, now this is where the confrontation, the conflict, the complexity comes. And it sounds like you just shared it. You're trying to figure out how to lead, how to consult. You had just gotten laid off. You're trying to figure out this next phase. Paint a little bit of act two, which is like where you're kind of struggling and trying to leverage this skill and learn around coachability. What do you got?
So honestly, it was just like showing up every day and listening to him and asking him questions and also checking my ego.
Nice. Keep going.
So I think that just also brings me to the self-awareness element where I had to be willing, because I talk about like a willingness to do the work, then also then leaning into it to be, allow myself to be coachable and to ask the questions. So I think I had to, yeah.
So just so we're tracking, I like this. You went to the third base already, which I like it. So second is I had to show up, had to figure this out. While I don't know, I'm trying to figure out who I am. I'm asking the questions, I'm listening, and I'm really immersing myself in being open and curious.
Yeah.
That might be your act two.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Act three, this is the lesson. This is the learn. What did you learn? This is where awareness, now give me that.
Yeah. This is awareness that I had to leverage the things I knew how to do, have confidence in myself, and not actually take myself out of the game. And then by saying, I don't know how to do these things yet, I had to rely on the things I knew how to do. And then to practice and be willing to mess up a little bit at times.
Yes.
And again, like to learn to, we talk about this a lot, like put those reps in. And then each time I put myself in situations, new situations, I was like, well, this will be my first time trying. So I'm going to put the effort. And then what am I going to be my key learnings from it? And then I would check in with him and say, what's your feedback?
So then you bring it home again. Remember, we're on the diamond. You bring it home and you reiterate what you just started us with, which is why I think coachability is one of the most important skills when it comes to not just what I learned on the basketball court, but also now as a consultant and leader and entrepreneur.
Wow.
So if you were to tell that whole story real quick, right? If I were to give you a minute and a half, 2 minutes, and you were to set me up and go through your quick diamond, what would you say?
So I would say that the coach is what we're talking about. And my example is when I had been laid off and was refinding myself. That was the challenge, the struggle I was in, and shifting myself was about becoming a consultant and aligning with someone who I could learn from and checking my ego, learning in the process, getting my reps in to allow myself to go on the journey to then be able to show up as an elevated version of myself, I would call it. I talk a lot about evolving so that I can continue to maximize the impact and contribution that I have with people.
Which is why coachability, from my lessons learned with Bob.
Yep.
Right. And this is where, again, you bring it back and you just remind us, because your story, your unique part of being coachable, in this case, you get to tell a story about Bob, and it sets the context and the stage when it comes to telling your story. So being able to set the stage, tell us why you were struggling, what were you struggling with, what you learned, and then to bring it back. It's a very simple structure when it comes to storytelling. Yet at the same time, what happens is sometimes we're like, I have hard work. I work hard, or I can handle feedback. Awesome. When, where, what? Give me some emotion. What were you doing? When you watch this tape again, you're going to be like, your eyes go up and you're like, I was in Denver, right? You are going to a place. Great. Bring that place to us.
Yes.
Bring that place to us.
Right.
And that is the key piece of being able to bring a connection and story and emotion to our audience. And we don't do that. We usually just brushstroke. What does marketing want me to say? Say the thing. There's no authenticity, no personality. Again, I could go on and on about this, but
Great. And I had actually wanted to dig into your storytelling, because it was the part that when one of the times we talked, we brushed on it, but I didn't. So thank you for allowing me to be a little bit of guinea pig. We get on the spot. Thank you.
You rocked it. Thank you for
allowing me. Thank you. But honestly, it's such a great example for the audience. So now you all have heard from Charlie. Now you have a better idea of what he does. Also, the impact that you're able to have with me so quickly. We didn't even set it up like that, folks. That was literally an on the spot thing. But if people are interested and they're like, gosh, Charlie, I would love for you to work with me or work with my team. I know you mentioned you're working with Google. You mentioned that you worked with the MLB Players Association, I think, or retired players. So for the audience, give them an idea if they are interested. They're like, oh gosh, what could he work with me? Who do you work with?
Sure. Yes. So both ends, right? Teams, sports organizations. Yes. Right. I typically will come in there and it's more focused around presence, team building, culture, where I'll come in and talk for an hour, hour and a half and get some pen to paper if it's wanted on how to define what presence means for their actual team and organization. I had a blast doing that with teams recently. And on the corporate side, it is that like leadership offsite or that kind of keynote. It's usually two-pronged. Yes, I'll come in and speak to a broader audience where it's more me talking at the audience and bringing it. And then there's the actual storytelling workshops that I will do live with the team, which is a little more immersive, right? 2 hours, 4 hours, where it'll be like a version of what we just did, except everybody will do it. And then on the other side of it, right, there's one thing to know your story and the other ability to be able to tell it. And telling it is the head, heart, body. It's the sport of speaking. It's like, how are you bringing the right type of energy to the stage? What are you doing with your hands? Like all of those key elements that you see someone who's performing on stage, what exactly are they doing? It's the sport of speaking. And I take a lot of those, the mental preparation and a lot of this stuff that I would typically do on the field. And I've kind of translated that with some of my experience working in the communications world of how you can actually go in and help a team or somebody deliver a keynote on stage or be on a panel and have that same type of conviction and delivery. So it's two-pronged. It's keynote and it's workshop.
Okay.
That's typically how I operate.
Which is such a great example of how you have applied all of your skills and to your own reinvention and been able to do it, which is awesome to hear. And I will say for the audience, remember, folks, we're always storytelling. We're always pitching. Again, whether it's pitching an idea, whether it's, you know, even if you're going to meet someone, you're kind of pitching yourself, right? That is just storytelling. If you represent a brand or you represent an agency and you're pitching, you want to work for someone, remember, all of this applies. This is not just me as an individual, Sean, I want to learn how to tell my story. Because if you're in the audience and you're like, well, I'm not a speaker, I'm not a presenter, so this doesn't apply to me. This is where I'm saying wrong. Sorry, I don't usually do, as you said, you don't usually do shoulds. I don't usually do wrongs. But I really do think too often people underestimate the reality that we're all storytelling constantly. We're all pitching. We're all having these conversations. And it leans into influence. Again, with intention, but you're telling the story to influence people. You're telling the story to move the ball forward. You use baseball, I use basketball. This has been such a rich conversation and an authentic conversation. I think that anybody can just draw so much from.
Sean, thank you. And I think the last word that you shared there, I want to just kind of maybe not put a pin in, but emphasize the word authenticity, because it does get a bad rap. And it gets a bad rap because it gets overused by people who are just saying, be authentic. But if people don't know how and what that means to them, I like to offer it. Think of a sense of play. Like how often when you say, oh, you're being your authentic self, a lot of times you are not thinking and concerned with what other people are doing, which is why I think it's so important to find your play. And when I think of play, I think of the fun stuff. I think of the silly stuff. And if I'm on stage and I didn't realize this, but I had a conversation with a C-suite executive, one of the top tech firms here in San Francisco, and we're sitting there talking, and this gentleman had managed and run teams at Oracle years ago. He's preparing for a keynote and he shared something with me that stuck. And he was like, you know, after I went through the High School of Business at Berkeley, the one thing I really wish I would have done was kind of played more and had a little more fun with the presence and like the delivery side of it. So as we're preparing his talk that he typically gives to the entire company, C-suite, you name it, I was like, instead of your standard like intro, right? Because he does like a talk on, oh, here's what I learned from the week or here's a win from the week. I was like, what did you eat for lunch today? He's like, oh, well, Senior Sisig in San Francisco has got the best burrito. And he like told me his order. Right. So I was like, why don't we start with that? Why don't you tell your audience your win for the week and go talk about a burrito? Right. So we talk about it. We design his whole talk. And then he finishes it up and he's like, you know what people really enjoy? I'm like, what? And he's like, they liked hearing my food choice for the week. And he's like, I kind of had fun talking it, like, odd. Like the second that we flip the script and switch the narrative and have a little play when we're presenting ourselves, a message, when we create space to play, you find your authenticity.
That is
so a bit of a how, right? For the people who are like, oh, be authentic. Or they're like, hey, some people aren't ready to be authentic. There's a mask that they may have. Great. Good. incorporate some sort of play into your being and then allow that authenticity to come out and be aware enough to jot it down, note it, and be like, all right, I'm bringing this in. Mm-hmm. I don't want to wear the Kohans. I want to wear my Jordans. They make me more playful. Awesome. Go wear the J's.
Such a great point. And I love ending on this, giving people another nugget of the how of it. So beautifully said. It's been awesome having you on the show, Charlie. I hope we get to do more fun stuff like this together. More coaching quarters.
Absolutely. I know it was fun. Thank you for adapting with me real time and going through iterated version of the diamond is like I'm referencing and starting to call it. But thank you for doing that live with me. It was fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Folks, you've seen him here. Reach out to Charlie. Follow him on LinkedIn. He's got some great posts. Thanks so much, everybody. Have a great day.